Well, good morning and welcome to WJBM Studios here in Jerseyville, Illinois, and the Local Spotlight Show. With me this morning, I have, again, Tom Groppel, retired Lieutenant Colonel in the Army. Did that for 20 years, and for the last 35 years, he's been Director of Ceremonies and Special Events for the Government of the United States. And that includes the funerals, Veterans Day, Memorial Day, Unknown Soldier, anything that happens where there's going to be an event, he's taking care of it. Been doing that for 35 years. Has a place here in Jersey County, a farm, and has a place in D.C., travels back and forth, and does his job and comes back, spends times here, part of the Rotary here at Jerseyville, Illinois. And we're going to take off where we left off when we were starting to talk about funerals and what goes on as far as planning and processing a funeral. And he's known every and talked to every president and worked with every president up until the present. And they all talked to him ahead of time about, you know, getting their funerals in line, what they were going to do, et cetera. And he tries to, you know, put it together, whether it's a funeral for them or the first lady. He takes care of the ceremony and makes it right. Of all these Tom.
Welcome. Thank you.
Glad to have you back. I got a question for you, Tom. Of all the deceased presidents, and you've handled all their funerals, who would you say is the smartest president you ever got to know?
I'd put Mr. Nixon in that category.
Mr. Nixon?
Yes.
Tell us why.
I was never in his presence that he had anything on his desk. His desk was entirely, not a pad of paper, not a pencil, not a book, nothing. And when he would speak, it was logical, it was sequential, made perfect sense. I'd have to think long and hard if I had any questions that he didn't explain as he was dictating things. But the way he left office, sort of in the middle of a term, and I was unaware at the time that he walked away with nothing. And so I tried for 10 years after he left office to get an audience with him. No audience to be given.
And you knew you had to handle his funeral at one time.
That's right.
And you just wanted to...
And I had a blank sheet of paper.
So, right. You didn't know anything.
No.
What to do.
No. And so every year I'd call his office in New Jersey and try to get an audience. And I got to know his secretary very well.
Yeah.
And I was getting nowhere. And so finally, about the 10th year, I get a call, and she puts me on hold. I thought, now this is a step in the right direction. I got put on hold. And she came back, and she says, Tom, how soon can you be here? I said, 2 o'clock tomorrow. And I went up, and it's the first time I'd had a one-on-one audience with President Nixon. Nothing on his desk, not a pad of paper, nothing. I went in, and I'd been refining my list of things I needed to know for his funeral for 10 years. So I'd been working on my list for 10 years.
Okay, you were ready for him.
I was ready for him. Well, that's not what he wanted to talk about. He wanted to talk about his wife.
Oh.
And she was ill. It was not common knowledge at the time. And he wanted me to understand what he wanted done with her. And so he was the kind of guy that when he was done talking, and he thought the conversation was over, you heard the click. This conversation's over. And you just packed up your bags and left.
Okay.
So he just starts talking about her. It was sequential. It was logical. And I'm just steady taking notes. And he got the end of what he wanted to tell me.
Yeah.
And I heard the click. This conversation's over. And so I got up and left the room. And Kathy, the girl outside, says, well, how'd it go? I said, I don't know. It'll take me five days to sort out all my notes.
Okay.
And so it was, again, all about the missus and so forth. So very insightful. I didn't know we was going to California from New Jersey.
Okay.
And she's going to be buried at the library and so forth. So he gave me all those instructions, and I was I went back up for a subsequent meeting, and I needed a big airplane to move her from New Jersey to California, and I didn't want to put her down in the baggage. I wanted to put her up on the flight deck. And I take the big airplane to put a casket up on the flight deck.
How big airplane? What are you talking about?
707.
A 707? Okay.
Yeah. Something that size.
Uh-huh.
And so Mr. Clinton was in the White House at the time, and I had asked the president, I said, Mr. President, I said, have you asked President Clinton about this? There was no answer to that question. He made no comment about the president. And I said, well, I said, I'm going to use your name, and I'm going to go to the White House and ask him for an airplane. No response. And so I thought, my only satisfaction was, I've said it, he's heard
and
it.
He didn't say, okay, good, yeah,
and,
go
and,
do that.
And he gave me, he didn't give me a negative response.
Okay.
And so I went to see the Clinton people. Mr. Clinton's chief of staff was a guy named Erskine Bowles,
yeah,
a gentleman out of North Carolina, smart as a whip, and I got an appointment to go see him, and I explained to him who I was and why I was there. I says, I'm looking for an airplane to take Mrs. Nixon, and I want one out of executive flight out of Andrews. And he was busy on his computer, and he turned to me and said, no. And I was just dumbfounded that he would respond to me in that way. And he stopped again, turned to me, he says, I take it you don't like my answer. And I said, well, I said, that might be the dumbest thing I've heard today, and got up and walked out. And I was convinced I'd be fired by the time I got back to my office. 2 days later, I got a call from Mr. Bowles' office, and he's asking for an appointment, asking if I'd come see him. So I went to go see Mr. Bowles again, and he says, I take it from your response the other day, you didn't like my answer. I said, well, Mr. Bowles, I said, your boss and President Nixon are in a very small fraternity of president and former presidents. Your boss is going to be in the same place Mr. Nixon is going to be someday, and he's going to ask the same question.
Okay.
And I says, I'm not threatening you. I says, but the word's going to get out that the sitting president wouldn't allow the former president to have an airplane.
Yes.
I said, I don't think that's the right answer. He says, you're right. It's not the right answer. He said, you can have your airplane. So I got my airplane, and we planned accordingly, and went on with Ms. Nixon, took her to California. The evangelist, I can't think of.
Oh.
Billy Graham.
Here we go.
Yeah, Billy Graham was there. And met us, and Reverend Graham and President Nixon were big buddies, and the humor was President Truman or President Nixon, when he got back in the car, he says, Billy, he says, you and Tom will work out what needs to be done tomorrow. And President Nixon told me who was going to be at the burial.
Yeah,
and it was him, his two daughters, the two son-in-laws, the grandkids, and one nanny. And those were the only people that were going behind the screen for the committal of Mr. Nixon in the burial.
Usually, do you have more?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And all the presidents were there. The Clintons were there. The Reagans were there. Everybody was there.
But those were the only people were going
to
be in.
That went to the committal service.
Okay.
And after... or during the service, I have never seen an adult man cry as hard as President Nixon cried. He probably went through 10 handkerchiefs. He was just crying uncontrollably at her funeral.
Wow.
With different people talking and so forth. And then the funeral's over, and we're going into reception afterwards. Clintons are going in. Everybody's attending went to the reception. We carried the casket to the graveside, and everybody else went to the reception. And the president was going to get up and speak. And I said, Kathy, I says, how in the world can he speak after he's just gone through this funeral with, for his wife?
Right.
And I says, he'll do fine.
Did he have a script?
Had no script, no written word, nothing. And
he's going to talk to everybody at this
reception.
Reception, yes.
He did not say I one time. It was all about her. From the time they met in Northern Nevada, and she was a nurse, until they married and went to the White House and the Senate and everything else, it was all about her. And he stops midstream and points to a gentleman in the audience. He says, and you, George McGovern, you and I can compete for the highest office in the land, and you're still a good enough friend to come help me bury my wife. I mean, what a... He just had so much control of what he wanted to say. But again, it was all about her.
I'll be darned.
All about her.
Love it. Love it. So you buried... Got that done. And then I know you did Ford, Carter, Reagan, Bush 41. Which one do you think is be interesting to the listeners to comment on of those?
Oh, Mr. Reagan was an interesting individual. Didn't want to talk about anything while he was in office. After he got out of office and got to California, they took great interest in it, especially when he started showing the illness and so forth. Probably the most interesting thing was in one of my visits to see him in California, I kept running through my head, there's something I don't know. There's something I don't know about this funeral. I haven't asked the right questions. And because he had a very interesting family among his kids, his oldest daughter and younger son and so forth, and they were not without an opinion or two.
Okay.
And so it finally dawned on me, if something happens to the president or missus and they're incapacitated, who do I go to for guidance?
Right.
And I didn't know what the answer was to that question.
Okay.
So I asked him one time when I was up in his office, I said, Mr. President, I said, and I posed it to him just like that, who should I go to? He didn't even hesitate, and he came up with a name I had never heard.
Really?
And I said, sir, I said, who is that? He said, oh, he's a friend of mine here in Los Angeles. I said, does he know what you just told me? I think so. I said, could you give that to me on a notarized letter? He said, why would you want that? I said, I don't think your children will understand this. That yeah. if you and the missus are incapacitated, that I'm going to go to somebody else and not go ask them.
Yeah, the oldest son or the oldest daughter or somebody like that.
He said, that's who I want. I said, I need that notarized, on a notarized letter. He said, okay, fine. And I got it.
Yeah. You know? And was he very helpful, the guy that he's...
I've never talked to him. I didn't have to.
Oh.
Yeah, but I knew where I had to go if I needed him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But the Reagans were an interesting group.
When we talked earlier, I'm gonna jump off presidents for a minute. But when we were talking, you said, who do you think was the most interesting person you've ever been around that visited the White House?
Oh. And I say this as a non-Catholic.
As a non-Catholic, all right.
Yeah,
we got a lot of Catholics out there listening.
No,
but
I say it as a non-Catholic. Pope John Paul.
Pope John Paul.
He came during the Carter administration. President Carter was not without his beliefs and his faith. I mean, he was a terribly religious man. But I think the Pope had him buffaloed.
Oh, yeah?
I mean...
What happened?
The Pope... The man, I have never met another human in my life that genuinely radiated. That man radiated. He had an aura about
yeah.
him. And he always carried his hands up and folded in front of his chest.
Yes.
Always very soft-spoken and so forth, but I used to give the Secret Service detail a hard time. I said, you don't ever assign a Catholic to protect the Pope. I said, they can't take their eyes off of him. They're looking the wrong way. You can't look at him and protect him. You have to look away from him.
And even you were mesmerized, and you've seen hundreds and hundreds of dignitaries.
But the man was he just had a genuine aura about him. He was, and I understand now about becoming a saint.
Okay.
You know, yeah. I mean, the concept of sainthood has a whole new meaning for me now that I've met John Paul.
I'll be darned. That is amazing. That is amazing. Just couldn't keep your eyes off of him.
Oh, he was an interesting man.
Yeah.
Interesting man. And President Carter was not without his beliefs. I mean, he was as Christian as you want to be.
Right.
But he was taken with the Pope.
Hey, we've got a few minutes left. Do you have any comments on Carter, on President Carter, about any engagements with him that we might find interesting?
He was a wonderful man. I think on the political side, again, my opinion, I heard the statement made when he came to Washington, D.C., that he got to Washington without the help of the Democratic Party. And the Democrats in Washington said, okay, if you got here without us, let's see if you can govern without us.
Uh-oh.
And they hung him out to dry.
Is that right?
I don't believe the in-town Democrats were very supportive of Mr. Carter. He tried hard. He had some failures. But the majority of his people were out-of-towners, mm-hmm. and had helped him become the governor of Georgia. And just because you're effective in Georgia doesn't mean you're going to be effective when you come to Washington, D.C.
It's a whole different planet, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. And if you are an outsider and you come in, it's a lot tougher.
Yep.
Yeah.
It is.
Yes. And it's just the way it is.
Yep. but he was a wonderful man. It was with the Carters. They were so initially President Carter was going to be buried with Miss Lillian. For those that are old enough to remember his mother.
Okay. Yeah.
When she came to the White House, and then but his younger brother Billy was on his deathbed, and as the president related to me, Billy asked Jimmy, "Can I be buried with Mom and Dad? And what are you going to say to your dying brother?"
Right.
And so he gave up his place with his dad and Miss Lillian, and so we're back to drawing boards.
Okay.
And I said, "Okay, sir." I said, "That's fine. Where are we going to go?" I said, "Are we going to go to Atlanta to your library, or are we going to stay in Plains?" And the answer was not forthcoming real fast.
You had to think about it a little bit.
And so after some thought, they would decide we're going to stay in Plains.
Stay in Plains.
Yeah. Oh, and that's where Mrs. Carter has been buried with her demise.
I see. Tom, you have had and continue to have a very interesting career. At any time, you get a call from D.C., hey, we need you up here, and you're on a plane, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Very interesting job. Great. And we're just really happy and proud to have you as a part of our community. And I wish you the best. And thank you so much for coming in today and sharing with us. And I might have you back again.
Okay.
All right. Fair enough. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.